Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Part 2.
I'm Greg Wyshynski of ESPN, home of basketball and other sports.
I'm Ryan Lambert from watching basketball on ESPN between periods.
Sean McAnoo from The Athletic. I'm pretty sure we only do hockey.
And you're in Puck Soup. There's a lot of things that I've come to do during the playoffs, and that's one of them. Lambert is kind of, you know, we get to the intermission. I don't really care what Keith Jones has to say, and then I flip over to see what's happening in the Hoopy game. And I reiterate what I've said in many places, which is that I've now watched every sport that's come back during the pandemic after the break for COVID. And I just think, and this is like a Homer thing to say, but I just think that. It's a Homer thing to say too, but I just think that hockey got it right. Like I look at the NHL and it looks and sounds like a playoff game in a way that other sports don't look the same. Like I guess the NFL is close. Baseball doesn't feel like baseball to me. It feels like even more boringer, which is incredible. And the NBA feels like it's being played in some kind of a fucking TV studio. I don't know. I think hockey did it right.
Okay. I don't.
Am I wrong on that?
No, I mean, again, like the problem with hockey is that the piped in crowd noise is really bad. I like it is distracting how bad it is, I think. And yeah, I mean, again, you know, it's my mistake for watching games not on mute because then I have to hear Eddie Olczyk saying like some teams don't want size in this league, and it's like okay, I can't fucking wrap my head around that argument today. But yeah, I think that's my main issue is like, you know, just because they're playing in a big arena, like I don't think you're getting anything different than you would get if they were playing in a high school rink, except maybe more angles. But there's more angles in basketball too. So,
right. But I don't know. Like I feel sometimes the basketball experience has taken me out of the excitement of the playoffs, and as much as it's artificial in hockey, and I agree with you, like, I don't know why they didn't do more angles, and I also don't know why they didn't be bolder with the crowd noise, because you could really replicate a game if you wanted to, but it means that you have to be a bit more editorial about it than I
also don't. I also don't think you could, though.
No, you don't think so?
No, because, like, you know, If you played like booing on a call, then like the league's going to be all pissed off about that for some reason.
Right.
And also, like, again, the big problem with the crowd noise is not just that it's like muted, but also that it's like a half second too late. And, you know, it's just a little uncanny at that point.
Right. What do you think, Sean?
I mean, I haven't watched much of the NBA. Other than the Raptor stuff, I'm just not a basketball fan, so I wouldn't be able to compare it. Baseball, you're right. I didn't really realize this before this year, but baseball, I think of all the sports, has far more crowd interaction. You know, and just the foul balls into the stands, it's constantly reminding you that there's nobody there. I think football's been okay, but mm-hmm. I will say watching 2 weeks of the NFL, I no longer take for granted the NHL fake crowd noise guys, because while it certainly hasn't been perfect, the NFL has been bad in a couple of games. Like I spend my Sundays watching Red Zone, so I'm flipping between all the different games. And there are some that have been like legitimately bad. Like you're watching the game going like, that sounds super fake and it's way too loud right now. So like, let's fix this or something. And it was bad in week one and I thought it would be better last week and it kind of wasn't. So I like I've said, I feel like the NHL has done far better at pretty much all of this than I thought.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether it's how it compares to the other sports, I think a lot of that's just sort of the nature of the game. The other piece about the NHL playoffs, and I hate to say it, and, you know, maybe I lose my fan card for this. a lot of the crowd noise in the playoffs, when you think of like those great moments of crowds going crazy, it's like at the beginning of the game. Everybody stands up, they do the whatever, they throw whatever their seafood of choice on the ice is, and then the game starts and it like settles down to a reasonably quiet crowd. And so maybe that's why we don't quite miss it as much as we might in other sports. Like, you know, the NFL, when it's noticeable in the NFL is when it's like third down and the visiting team has the ball and you're expecting that like big swell of crowd noise and it just doesn't happen. But NHL's done well. I make my living complaining about these guys, but I don't have a ton to complain about with how they've presented the games.
It is kind of like a moment by moment thing, right? Like in hockey, like in the NFL, there's every drive has that moment where the crowd will rise to its feet and get ready, either a defensive stop or, you know, a big third down play. The thing I miss about the NHL is when a team's trailing by like a goal in the third period, and there is that moment where the crowd will decide it's time to will their team for a rally or like support their team to close out the game. They'll play like Bush's Machine Head, and the crowd will just like start going crazy and getting ready before a face-off. I miss those sort of spontaneous moments because you can't really replicate that with the push of a button, you know?
Yeah, I think my other thing with it too is like the artifice of like, oh, actually there's a lot of fans here and we love having the fans. And so like the idea that the NBA is the only league that's not doing that, where they're like, yeah, we're in like a TV studio.
Yeah.
I actually kind of like respect that more than, you know, everybody like, oh, we're going to have Gary Bettman get booed. Isn't that fun? And it's like, no, I think that kind of sucks. Like just, it's funnier if he comes out and there's like no reaction at all. All the, like, you just hear the players on the ice going like, oh, here it is, boys. You know, like, it's not, you're not fooling anybody, I guess, is my point. So, like, why bother pretending you are fooling somebody? Does that make sense?
No, it does make sense. And I also want to say, because your point on that made me think of something else, which is that, is the NBA the league where the fans are kind of beside the point? Where it's so player-centric that it could be a sport that's played on, you know, a blacktop in Brooklyn and, like, it wouldn't suffer from it just because of how intense everything. Like, I don't think I can remember a thing where, like, an NBA guy after the game is like, well, you know, we really needed the crowd on that one. You know, I feel like the crowd is sort of like an accessory rather than being a driving force. Like, it can be in the NHL, like it usually is in the NFL, and, like, it can be sometimes in baseball, too, especially in October. I feel like the crowd isn't that much of a huge factor in the NBA.
Yeah, that might be part of it for sure. I mean, like, there's definitely, you know, when big stuff happens, there's definitely all, you know, cuts to the crowd and that kind of thing. But yeah, for the most part, like the only people that you really see on TV are the people sitting courtside, and they're all rich assholes who are maybe half paying attention to the game, right? Like,
right.
There's not like, you know, Johnny from Queens is sitting next to the Nets bench and really, you know, giving it to a guy from the Pistons or whatever. He just
or the other time you see him is obviously
some tech asshole.
Right, some tech asshole. But the other time you see them obviously is on free throws when inevitably somebody brings a giant cardboard cutout of a player's like mistress or some shit.
Sure, yeah,
and they wave it during free throws. That's the only other time. I'll say this about the crowd, fake crowd stuff. Shows are starting to come back that have been filmed during the pandemic. In particular, two of them on Fox, The Masked Singer and the new Ken Jeong show that I watched last night, in which you try to guess who the best singer is during a lip sync performance. It's called Can You See My Voice or something along those lines.
Sounds great.
It was better than expected, to be quite candid with you. Mm. But there was a disclaimer at the end of the show, at the very end of the credits, because it fooled me. Ruby and I were kind of convinced that they filmed this fucker before the shutdown. But at the very end of the credits, there was this the first tip-off was in the credits. There was, like, a listing for COVID manager. So
yeah,
that's
sure.
One tip-off that maybe they filmed it during the pandemic. But the other thing is that at the end of the credits, there was a disclaimer that said, you know, shots of the crowd were artificially created and pieced together from previous recordings by XYZ production company. And I swear to God, like, if you didn't tell me that, they did it so well, including, like, reaction shots of real people to the performances that are happening, that are clearly, like, reaction shots from, you know, American Ninja Warrior or some shit.
Right.
Like, I have nothing to do with the fucking thing. Like, it very much fooled me. So I guess this is a good thing and also a really creepy kind of, you know, deepfake thing that's happening now in,
yeah,
in pop culture.
It's the thing of, you know, the people who are laughing on, I don't know.
The Emmys or whatever.
Or not even the Emmys. Like, I was going to say, like, I almost said the Big Bang Theory, but that's not on TV anymore. But, like, you know, those laughs were all recorded in the 30s, and those people have been dead for decades.
Sean knows what I'm talking about when I say that Married with Children had the greatest canned laughter in the history of mankind.
Absolutely.
That is a show with the most – and it may have even been – I'm assuming it was canned just because it was so – over the top.
Every sitcom,
but it may have been
canned. But yeah, that fake audience, they were not just roaring with laughter, but they were so shocked and offended by every third joke that it was, it was excellent.
I can't imagine a live audience would be able to hit the mark every time, like, Peggy walked into the room or some shit on that show.
Mm-hmm.
What a classic. Maybe my favorite Sam Kinison performance outside of Back to School, the one episode where he played the guardian angel in there. What the fuck is that movie? It's a Wonderful Life parody. I was about to say What a Wonderful World, but that's definitely not a Louis Armstrong song.
That's right.
What a Wonderful World it was on a Wednesday night, as we did this podcast, as the Lightning took a 2-1 lead over Dallas, it was the return, albeit brief, boys, of one Stephen Stamkos.
Hadn't heard about this. What happened?
Well, he came back. He played for like 2 minutes, scored a goal, won the Conn Smythe, which I thought was an accomplishment. Looked very much like Cap in Avengers Infinity War when they find him.
You know, you don't have to compare everything to Marvel movies. Did you know that? Like, you're allowed to compare it to other things, like, have other cultural touchstones.
I just wanted to say that because this is the only years, I think, since 2008 maybe or 2009 when we won't have an MCU film. So I want to make sure that we all keep it in circulation.
Scorsese
don't forget about
finally wins.
Ryan, what did you think about the resurrection of Stephen Stamkos, albeit briefly?
It was fun as hell. It was awesome. You know, like he went out for that first shift, and I think he just kind of had a hit and maybe shuffled the puck around the attacking zone for a second or two. And I was like, yeah, that seems about right. And then I didn't really clock that it was him. Until like he shot the puck, and I was like, "Oh, that was Stephen Stamkos' shot." That was, you know, like he got around. I don't know who the defender was, but he got around the defender so easily and quickly that my brain would not allow me to comprehend that this is a guy who missed 9 months of hockey or whatever it's been. So, yeah, he looked pretty good for the 4 minutes he played.
For the 4 minutes he played,
yeah, and then we don't really know what happened after that, but. And we won't know until the series is over. It was great. It was a great story. You know, especially given that, you know, the fact that he left with the injury, but stayed on the bench, and the fact that he was talking to the media afterwards, and there didn't seem to be any concern. Because when he did leave initially, I kind of had that momentary, like, okay, is this going to be like a Paul Kariya moment where we all love that he came back and scored the goal, but then years later, we're looking back going, that shouldn't have happened. He shouldn't have been out there, you know, because he did something, you know, he re-aggravated some injury or, you know, turned a big problem into a career-altering problem. Doesn't sound like that happened. So, you know, fingers crossed that's the case, in which case it was a great story. You saw, like, the reaction shot from the Tampa bench was fantastic. Just, you know, you could see how much meant to those guys to see him do that. And, you know, if this series goes the way it seems to be headed and Tampa does win the cup, then, you know, I'm sure the fact that he got in and contributed in some way is going to be just a huge kind of burden off of his shoulders that, you know, even if he only played 3 minutes in the whole playoff run, he did something. He wasn't just watching from the sidelines. So
it's going to be a full 15 minutes on the Stanley Cup DVD. That's for sure.
Right. I mean, it was so fucking cool when they bought him out for the Prince of Wales. Like, I didn't expect that, you know, for him to be a part of that. And I always wondered if, you know, in the back of my mind, if it would be like awkward for him to take part in that shit without having been an active participant in one of these games. I mean, he is the captain. In theory, he gets the cup first. But like you said, now he can say he took part in it and stuff. So that's good for Stamkos. Listen, there's always going to be some rooting interests on both sides in these situations. Like, I'd love to see Rick Bowness win the cup after the fucking journey he's put this team on. That'd be incredible. And, like, the journey he's been on as, like, an assistant coach for the last three decades. Like, that'd be incredible. Steven Stamkos is a very easy guy to root for. Yep. Like, the shit that he's been through injury-wise, the fact that so many of his peers in the sort of upper echelon of goal scoring and MVP contention have cups. And just the shitty luck he's had. I mean, some of it is his own making. I mean, he's done some disappearing acts in some pretty big spots. One assist in the Stanley Cup final. He was scoreless in the last three games against Washington in the conference final a couple of years ago. But he also was injured for the Pittsburgh series. So, like, I don't know. He's had a run of really shit luck and bad deals and bad hands dealt to him. And he's like one of those guys on Tampa that you legit would be like, this is cool that he won. Hedman's the same way. Like, I feel like Hedman is just like a fucking next level player, best defenseman in the world. I just kind of want to see him win a cup. I know it's not validation. Like he's on a track probably for the Hall of Fame at this point. But like,
oh yeah,
but just like what a fucking cool player. Like to do the shit that guy does on a night in night out basis.
Yeah, he's really good. He's, you know, it's funny. I was thinking about it last night. What obviously when he scored that goal, I was like, oh, that almost certainly, you know, ties up the Conn Smythe forum. But then I looked at it, and I was saying this earlier, but Nikita Kucherov is having the kind of playoff where if Hedman even had two fewer goals, we would just be already giving him the Conn Smythe. He's got 30 points in 22 games. It's like his 5-on-5 expected goals percentage is like almost 70, I want to say. It's...
yeah.
It's like, how is he playing this well and isn't the consensus pick for the Conn Smythe? Like, that's crazy.
There's also a thought that he's hurt, too. Which, yes. I mean, those
the
thoughts
beating
kinda
he's
come
taken
and go
in this series alone is...
Those thoughts kind of come and go depending on how well the Lightning played. Because if you remember in Game 1, they were, like, super tired. Uh-oh. Do they have any legs left? And then they fucking control play for the next, you know, five of the next six periods. But, Sean, MVP time. Like, who's your guy right now for the Lightning?
I think it's Hedman. But, yeah, I mean, Kucherov could make the case. Braden Point, if he had another big game or gets another overtime goal, it kind of moves right back into the discussion. So,
well,
I mean, that's
we can't discount him on the basis of his being Canadian.
Of course.
So like that is a huge differentiating factor.
Yeah.
Now, that's not fair because there's a lot of Canadian voters for awards, and Hedman's been a finalist for the Norris in four straight seasons. So he is also a darling of Canada.
Yeah.
The Russian guy, not so much, but Hedman's pretty of Canada.
The other thing that I wrote about this week is defensemen and goalies can actually win the Conn Smythe as playoff MVP, even though they can't win regular season MVP, apparently,
right,
for reasons no one's quite clear on. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting. I don't know how, when you look at the stats, you factor in the play-in round, or if you just cut that out, or if you just look at the overall playoff numbers that they're giving you and count that as the playoffs. But ultimately, I don't think that really matters. I think Hedman's the favorite right now, but we've got at least two games left and maybe more than that. So that's a sign of a good team. You know, if you get to this point and there's like one guy that's clearly like, oh yeah, this guy is definitely going to win, then that potentially can be a sign of problems, because if that guy gets cold or goes hurt, then you're in trouble. Yep. And the Lightning have got like, you know, three or four guys, because I mean Vasilevsky throws a couple of shutouts in the last two games and suddenly he's right in the mix.
Yeah.
And speaking that kid of those, is how the Devils won the 2003 Cup, is by having the Ducks one guy get cold in the final.
Yep. Yeah, and Tampa's gonna do that with Anton Hudobin as well. So at least that's awesome. How it looks. I don't know.
By the way, you just reminded me of a point I wanted to make earlier, Sean, which is that about the round robin and the qualification round. In watching the NFL this season, I have never valued preseason games more in my entire life. Like, yeah. Fuck, man. Like, the some of the plays that have not been made in the first 2 weeks of the NFL season that probably would have been made if they had had a practice game or two is legion. Mm-hmm. And the NHL was smart to kind of ease into it in a way.
Yep.
All right. So let's talk about Dallas. We got criticized last week because I think – for those who don't know, so we recorded the show in different parts last week. Because of the timing of the series, and maybe because of that, we didn't give Dallas its like sort of own segment type deal. Some people noticed that, so that might have been what happened there. But on the Dallas side of the equation, like game one was great outside of the third period, and then it seems like maybe the third period is what the rest of the series is going to end up looking like undisciplined play and Tampa exerting their will.
Yeah, I mean, even the second period last night, where you know, in theory, you're not supposed to have one team be dominant over the other because of the long change and all that kind of stuff. Tampa had like a 98% expected goals in the second period of a game they were already leading. Like, that's mm-hmm. – you can't let that happen. That was when I was like – because, you know, third period of game one, you go, well, look, I mean, yeah, they gave up a million shots. They barely touched the puck. But all those shots were from the outside, and Khudobin, like, wasn't really bothered too much, despite the fact that he made 58 saves or whatever the number was. Yeah, you can't say that anymore. They look bad, and also they – are letting the Lightning go wherever they want on the ice now. So it's a real fucking problem.
And straight up just giving them the puck sometimes, which is not a very good decision to do if you're Miro Heiskanen. The thing about Tampa that's interesting is that, like, if you track Dallas's journey through these playoffs, like, incredible offensive series against Calgary.
Yeah, they beat a dog shit team that everybody thought was bad.
Right. An incredible offensive series against Colorado, which was, you know, beaten to a bloody pulp by that point. I thought, like, the work they did against Vegas was really impressive, and it also was, not coincidentally, Khudobin's best series. So they went in sort of a scratch-and-claw offensive series against Vegas, which themselves don't really know what to do now that they face a good defensive team. Tampa's a real interesting animal in the sense that when they are going well, yeah, they can pop like five goals on the board against you. But what they really do is play D. 10 of the last 12 games in these playoffs, they've allowed two goals or fewer. That's pretty fucking good in the bubble, and you're starting to kind of see that type of hockey in this series where, like, when they control play and kind of get their shit together in their own zone, it's real tough to score against them too. They're fucking real good, Sean.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, and obviously that's not exactly breaking any ground with the analysis when we say that, but at some point, like, you can just sort of ditch the narratives and you know, all this stuff. You know, the will to win and the, no, they're just really good. They got a lot of really good players, and they're really good players that are healthy enough to do so are playing the way that they can play. And, you know, sometimes the Stanley Cup final just comes down to not even necessarily who's hot and who's not, but just who can find that groove where they're playing the way they can, and who has that little wobble that you get in hockey sometimes where you're just like, we just weren't quite there tonight. You know, we had a couple guys who were squeezing it just a bit. And that's you can get past that in the regular season all sorts of ways, but when you're playing a really good team with everything on the line, sometimes it makes a difference. And so far, we're three games into what could be a seven-game series, but so far Tampa, other than the first half of the first game, hasn't really shown any sign that they're gonna let the Stars off the hook that way.
Yeah, I think it's worth also just bringing up how easily Tampa has rolled through these playoffs. You know, like, What was it? Five games in the first round, five in the second round, something like that.
Five games by traditional math.
Yeah, right. But, like, they're not losing games very often, is my point. Like, they're going. Five games here, five games there, six games, and, you know, the six was everybody had the series said that's a wrap after game three. Like it got to six games, but nobody was really like convinced that the Islanders were going to really do anything to bother them. And right. Yeah, I mean, you know, they're the best team on paper coming in. I don't know that anybody in the history of the NHL playoffs has dressed a better fourth line than what Tampa started with last night. You know, like those guys are all really fucking good and would be at worst third liners on a lot of teams in this league. So, you know,
yeah.
At some point you just say, you know what, like the reason Tampa is doing this is because they just have so much more talent than everybody else. And if you give talent enough kicks at the can, eventually they're just going to roll through you. So,
and the other thing that Tampa's got going for, and this sounds like a ridiculous thing to say, when they've got a former 60-goal guy out with injury. But they've otherwise been very healthy, at least as far as having guys be able to play. You know, I'm sure everyone's banged up, but you know, their injured list for a lot of this has been Steven Stamkos, and that's it. You know, they had Point was hurt for a little while, but he got back in quick. We don't know who's dealing with what, but that's a big part of this too, because, yeah, we've seen teams put together that great depth of having four lines and then three guys get hurt and suddenly you're like,
you don't have four lines anymore.
Fourth line
right.
is a black hole. So that's, again, I don't want to say they've had good luck with injuries, because again, they're arguably best player or one of their three best players is not playing, but the volume of injuries hasn't been there so far.
Well, and that's the other thing, is it's crazy that you can say it's not just depth with them, like the level of high-end talent. The fact that you're talking about, again, a former 60-goal scorer who, you know, if he was healthy throughout his career, would easily have at least 550, probably 600 goals right now. And you're like, oh, he might be like their third best forward. And it's like, what the fuck? Right. How's that possible, man? Like, that's how good they are, though.
To speak about the efficiency of their series, it's all kind of part of the redemption tour narrative that they've got going. Like, Kucherov is a good example of that, too, where he gets fucking suspended against Columbus in that series and just doesn't play well. This is a team that when they've gotten into situations where they've played a Game 6 or a Game 7, or played a Game 6 and lost, and then they would usually lose in a Game 7, they've kind of stayed out of they've stayed out of those situations in the playoffs, which I think has benefited them. I picked them before the bubble, because I thought that the lack of crowd I picked them for a lot of reasons, but one of the reasons was I thought the lack of crowd would allow them to just play and be good and not get, you know, start squeezing the stick.
Yeah, I think that's overthinking it, man.
I don't think it's overthinking at all. I
know you don't.
No, I don't think for a lot of people. I think
I did make the same point, and I mean, it's not high on the list. I mean, nobody's saying that, but I said it might help them early on. Like, if they get into the game one and they're out there, you know, playing whoever they're going to play, and suddenly that goalie stands on his head and now you're down 2-0, to be in a building in front of your own fans where suddenly, like, you know, we know that playoff thing where the building gets a little too quiet and you can just feel the sense of, I thought that would help them. I mean, obviously now they're rolling so much.
They're rolling, but like, if that game six against the Islanders was at Nassau, like, maybe it's a different math for that series. I'm like Sean said, it's not maybe in my top 10 for why the Lightning could win the Cup, but it was definitely a factor. And I think that the efficiency of these series kind of speaks to them avoiding the situations in the past that have put them out of the playoffs by kind of like floundering late in these series.
Well, that's – I think some of that is just like, you know I don't think it has to do with, oh, I'm really worried about the crowd in Columbus or whatever. Like, I think it has to do with, you know, like they, to all the earlier points about, you know, they've built a team that's more competitive if you play a bunch of different kinds of hockey and that kind of thing. I think that matters.
Sure.
500 times more than like, to your point, like when they get a team on the mat, they're just like, oh, we're just gonna like punch them in the face until the ref steps in and says you can't do that anymore.
Right.
And that's what they're doing. Like, they're closing out series like it's no big fucking deal. But also they're doing, like, it's not like, oh, you know, they got to a game seven and they were dominant in game seven. No, they're like, oh, we're going to end this in five games or six, and that's the end of that. Like,
they're just going to lock in that sharpshooter and keep it on, and he doesn't even have to say I quit. He'll just pass out from loss of blood.
That's right.
Right.
Very good.
You know, yeah, so that's our Dallas segment. Where we talked about the Lightning
for 45 minutes.
I also wanted to mention two things about the Stars. Like, obviously, you mentioned before Ryan Khudobin, we're not going home. Awesome performance. Not necessarily his fault that this series has gone the way it's gone in the last two games. Could definitely still rebound and you know, steal a game, what have you. But he's not he carried them in that Vegas series, but he's not getting help now. And then the help that he could maybe use is the top line to fucking find its game again. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Radulov taking a billion penalties. Sagan has one assist since game five against Colorado. What the fuck?
Yeah. I think at this point we can all just admit those guys are horse shit. Like, that's it. There's no... There's no two ways about it. In the end, he was right.
He was right. Well, what happened to the Renaissance? Didn't Jamie Benn have a whole thing like last series where it looked like he was going to win the Conn Smythe?
Yeah, the whole thing was like it was less than a week, and he's
yeah, he had
like
four good games mode. Or whatever.
Yeah, beast mode redemption story. This is like the Art Ross Jamie Benn is back, and then three games in, no points.
The Sagan thing is just like, I can't even wrap my fucking brain around it. To have his line mates perform the way they have since the Colorado series, or like since game five of the Colorado series, and to only have one fucking apple that entire time. And I think, yeah, no, is that even strength? It wasn't on the power play. Just inexplicable. Like, you can't even make the classic Jonathan Taves argument of like, well, he's concentrating on his defense. Like, no, he's not. He's on a fucking scoring line.
Yeah, he's Tyler Sagan, so it's not like everybody's like, oh yeah, he's a real strong defensive center, two-way center or whatever. He's not. He's good.
Again, you want to give leeway and caveats and what have you for how the bubble has affected different people, and maybe there's some shit that we don't know that's going on or whatever the fuck, but like, man,
gotta play the games, man. Like, that's I like
a horrible run.
Yeah, the stuff about, oh, some of the guys are really sad in the bubble and blah blah blah. Of course, that makes perfect sense. But like, it's not like the other teams don't have guys who are sad. Like the Lightning, I bet have people who are like, oh, I kind of miss my kids, and they're absolutely fucking wailing on the Dallas Stars right now. So
because they want to see their kids,
yeah.
You know, they want to finish this thing quickly.
Yeah. The Stars keep saying we're not going home. Tampa's like, oh, we are, and we're going to do it by destroying you.
Last thing I want to say about Dallas is I've been super impressed with Klingberg. I mean, I know that Heiskanen's gotten a lot of love. Klingberg's real good, too. They're set up on that back line for a little
while. Well, yeah. I mean, they have the third best defenseman in the league in Esa Lindell, so.
That's. Oof. All right, yeah, that's yeah. They're good. Here's my other thing.
What
do you do back to back games, Friday Saturday? What do you do with Khudobin? You didn't.
You play him twice.
Yeah,
you
didn't want absolutely.
And especially
now that you pulled him in a game. Choice.
Yeah, and I think that helps. But like, I guess maybe the question isn't what do you do, because we saw it the last time they faced this, and they tried to put Bishop in and it didn't work. And we don't know where Ben Bishop's at. Maybe, you know, I don't know. But Elliot Friedman mentioned it on Hockey Night in Canada last night, where he was like, dude, is there any chance you look to Ben Bishop for either of those games? Especially like, what if Khudobin doesn't look great in a Friday game?
And then you got to go back to him in an elimination game. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you're down 3-1 and you're looking for something to spark. I mean, Ben Bishop against his former team coming back. Like, I'm assuming he's healthy enough to play, but not so healthy that they feel like he's 100%. Like, obviously, there has to be an overlap there of where you'd even consider it. But
I'm not convinced he's healthy enough to play. I mean,
and if he's not, it's a moot point because you're not putting this kid whose name I don't even know.
Jake Ottinger.
Boston
yeah. University's
on.
Own.
How dare you? Right. Why? Because he's an NCAA guy. You don't know his name.
No, he's a first round pick.
There's no good college players. It's not. You don't need to worry about that.
I mean, honestly, if you threw in Ottinger, it's probably not the worst thing in the world. I mean, he's not garbage. He's fine. He's playing in back of a team that's going to be playing really stout defense.
I think if it comes down to that. At that point, you have to say, Hudobin got us this far. We're just going down with the ship. Like, if this is how it's going to be, maybe it did. I don't know. But I guess the question is, what happens if we see a repeat of the scenario where Ben Bishop knocks on Rick Bonus's door and says, I can go if you need me? And
then Rick doesn't answer the door. He's just like, yeah. Oh, Rick's not here.
Yeah.
Turns off all the lights and lies down on the floor.
Yeah, exactly. Escapes out of the bathroom window. I think it's a good conversation to be had. I also wonder if Friday night's the series. Like if Dallas
it certainly
Friday
feels
night,
that way. Yeah.
Do they just peace out on Saturday and say, "All right, boys, we gave it our all, but let's pop the bubble
to come back 24 hours later"? That's
well. Then I hope they win on Friday. I'd like to see the series go a little bit longer than like 5 games.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't want to have the hockey season end and then you don't have anything to do for 8 months whenever they start the season again.
All right. Well, okay. Granted, once we get past the next few weeks of the draft and free agency,
yeah, sure.
Granted, we don't really know when things are going to start.
That's
But I get the sense that if the Stars win on Friday night, if the Lightning win on Friday night, they're just going to put a pillow over Dallas's face. Speaking of pillows. Today's episode of Puck Soup is sponsored by Brooke Linen.
Yeah. A little dark, but yeah.
It's a B-. There's room for improvement, but yeah.
All right. There you go. I love it. There's a lot of great ways to start off your day. You can eat your breakfast, maybe make a little smoothie, go walk your dog like Baby Sneakers and I did just before the podcast, meditate even. How about starting with making up your bed? It's a big thing in the morning because then you come back to the bed during the day or at night and it looks great. And when you've got the Brooke Linen going on, home of the internet's favorite sheets, your bed's going to look awesome. And it's going to feel awesome too. We've got the Brooke Linen sheets on our bed. We've got a couple sets. These are the linens that we swear by on the big old king bed that we've got. Now, yeah, I got a king bed. You occasionally got to treat yourself. To crawl into that bad boy after a night of watching hockey and writing until 2 in the morning is one of the highlights of my day. The sheets feel good. They're extraordinarily well made. They've got a variety of colors. So when you walk into the bedroom, the whole thing looks great. And there's more to love. You can bundle sheets and bedding big together. You can save big. You can get your duvet core sheet set, extra pillowcases in case one of them bad boys goes missing. Did you know that Brooke Linen has over 50,000 five-star reviews and counting?
Yes.
And it's for a good reason. It's because the sheets are awesome and literally will caress your skin, Ryan. Caress it as you drift off to sleepy land.
Wow.
You won't even be able to count the sheep because you're going to be asleep so quick because you feel so comfortable in this bed. Brooke Linen sheets are the perfect place to start making your mornings great. Brooke Linen is so confident in their product that all of their bedding comes with a lifetime warranty. And you can get 10% off your first order and free shipping when you use promo code PUCK, P-U-C-K, at brooklinen.com. That's brooklinen.com. Brooke Linen, everything you need to live your most comfortable life. And again, as we often talk about this on this show, sometimes we have advertisers that were like, hey, go buy this thing, and we're hoping that it's good. And sometimes we have advertisers where the product is something that we've all used, and we all love it. And Brooke Linen is in that category. Cannot recommend this product enough. All right, the NHL awards were handed out in a televised special where some of the greats from the Edmonton Oilers' history, including the Great One, on two occasions – handed out awards. Definitely thought Paul Coffey had the best setup in his house with every single trophy he's ever won since Mites behind him. Always appreciate that from players on their Zoom calls. But we get Roman Josi winning the Norris, the first Swiss player in NHL history to win a major award. We get Connor Hollybuck winning the Vezina, as he should. We get Cale Makar defeating Quinn Hughes for the Calder. And Leon Draisaitl overcoming Nathan MacKinnon and Artemi Panarin and others. Oh, and also Connor McDavid to win the Hart Trophy. Which one of these was the one that irked you the most, Ryan?
Oh, I think you can guess. I get what that, like, most voters just kind of said, okay, who had the most points this year? That's how we usually do it. But, you know, I think we're supposed to be smarter than that at this point, and a lot of guys just aren't and don't take their votes seriously at all and don't put any critical thought into it. And that's how you get, like, two writers leaving Nathan MacKinnon off their ballot altogether.
Woof. That is rough.
It's insane.
That is rough. Sean, were you happy with the Hart?
I was happy enough. I mean, I had Draisaitl third on my ballot, but it was, I think most of us felt like there was a top three among the forwards of Panarin, MacKinnon, and Draisaitl, and you could shuffle them around. And I mean, it's not a bad pick. It wasn't, you know, my personal pick at the end of it, and I get the arguments about his defensive flaws in his game and how that counters the value that his offense brings, but. You know, overall, it doesn't. There weren't any results. I think it speaks to the fact that the overall results were reasonably good this year. That you know, it's the annual tradition. Like it's so much fun to get angry about stuff that it's like, yeah, we got to end up digging deeper to you know, in a year where we're like, I can't believe this guy voted this person fourth. That's better than I can't believe they got the best player's position wrong.
You know, right. Yeah. Whatever it is.
So I didn't think there was anything outrageous at the top level results.
Well, first of all, I had him. I had the Deutschland Dangler. I looked on Wikipedia at his nicknames, by the way. Oof. The Deutschland Dangler was third on my ballot as well, ahead of MacKinnon. And I had Connor Hellebuck second behind Panarin, who was the top guy on my ballot.
Yeah, I couldn't believe how little love Hellebuck got, honestly, because of how fucking bad the Jets were.
The Jets were terrible. Not only were the Jets terrible, but then they lost like four out of their six defensemen in the summer. I mean, he's clearly the only reason they had a sniff of the playoffs. I just felt like that was one of the more obvious.
I really thought he was going to finish heart choices. Fourth. I wanted to get him higher than fourth on my ballot. I didn't. But I did not even consider putting him lower than that. Like it was locked in. The fifth spot to me was like kind of the wild card where I thought we'd see some weird stuff. But I thought
there's like four guys you could have put in there.
Yeah, I really thought Hellebuck was finishing
Pasternak and
finishing fourth, and I was surprised that it was loaded up as much on the forwards, even given that this is, like I said earlier, kind of a de facto forward award. I was surprised Hellebuck didn't finish fourth. But again, we're talking like he finished sixth instead of fourth. I don't know. It's
you mentioned there was nothing that really got you angry. I, of course, have a hair trigger anger mechanism when it comes to the awards. There was something that made me a little bit angry.
Oh, did somebody put in a player who didn't make the playoffs? Is that what happened?
No, that wasn't it this time. I mean, again, like the benefit of, but this was the easiest vote I ever had because, like, you know, 24 teams made the postseason in my mind. So, like, I didn't have to apply my usual bullshit to the vote. No, it was the six people that had Draisaitl first and McDavid second.
Yeah, insane.
Like, there's abso-fucking-lutely no way that you could justify that.
I
look back at it. I wrote about
I disagree. Hey, I didn't even have McDavid on my ballot, but the idea that it is impossible to have, like, what's the objection? Is it that to have two players, and if you've got two players
if you have the two most valuable players in the league, you shouldn't finish fucking 12th in the league.
Right. But no, I understand what you're saying. But, like, I don't have a problem with
Gretzky and Lemieux had been
idea.
On the same team in 1989,
that team would have finished first.
Yeah.
I
don't buy into the idea that there can only be one valuable player on a team, if that's what the objection is.
I think you could, but there shouldn't be the first and second most valuable players in the league on the same team. Like, if you want to put McDavid fifth and say, hey, thanks for the effort, that's fine by me. But, like, to use your nostalgic point, I wrote about this in the column this week. There was never a moment where an Oiler finished second to Wayne Gretzky. There was never a moment where Jagr or Francis finished second to Mario. There was never even a moment where, like, Stamkos finished second to Kucherov or Malkin to Crosby or Crosby to Malkin. Like, it just doesn't happen.
I will say, though, that that's in part because we don't see the ballots from 1984 or whatever. So you can't – like, I'm sure everybody in the Edmonton media was like, oh, my top five is Gretzky, Messier, Coffey, Fjord, like just
– and Lowe.
Essentikinen, I mean, right. Or whoever it is. Like, I'm sure everybody in Edmonton back then was just like, yeah, it's five fucking Oilers. What are we talking about?
Yeah, I mean, I just looked at it. Messier had third place votes one of the years that Gretzky won unanimously. So I take your point. You know, yeah, Messier never there was never an Oiler that was second to Gretzky, but McDavid didn't finish second to Draisaitl this year. Like, there was six guys right. who voted that
There's
way.
Six guys that did it, which I think is still insane. But I think you could make the argument that teammates can be valuable. Like, but they play the same fucking position.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even, I mean, if you had a situation where, like, you know, a forward gets your heart vote and then, like, Pronger gets your heart vote, maybe I can understand that shit.
Right.
Like, if it was Kucherov and Hedman, I could sure. understand that shit. Right. Yeah. But in this case, they play the same fucking position.
Let me and Yarmer Jagr both had first place votes in 96. So, this isn't.
It's not
some unprecedented thing.
Here's again, the reason I think it's outrageous is that it's not like, you know, they ran – like if when the Lightning set their, like, points record or whatever, if it had been Hedman and Kucherov or Kucherov and Hedman 1-2, I'd go, yeah, of course. Vasilevsky, you know, obviously goalies don't get that consideration, but he would be another one where I would say, oh, that makes sense. They won the league by 800 points this year. The Edmonton Oilers in the worst division in hockey finished second. So, right. So like, that's my objection to it is, like, how, you know, not, again, not to put in, like, oh, well, they didn't make the playoffs. How valuable could those guys have been? But they didn't make the fucking playoffs at the end of the day.
And look, I don't want to single out anybody's ballot because, honestly, it's only, like, a two-hour podcast. We'd be here all week. But, like, Luke Fox had Draisaitl and McDavid 1-2, did not have Panarin, had Austin Matthews and Jack Eichel. Like, if you have Jack Eichel on your ballot and you don't have Panarin, like, if you don't have Panarin, the only thing I can think of is, like, he didn't think the Rangers were a playoff team. But then you have Jack Eichel on your ballot.
Right.
Like, what the fuck? Yep. How do you not have Artemi Panarin on your ballot? That's insane. That's absolutely insane.
Well, again, one writer had just admitted, oh, I totally forgot to vote for Nathan MacKinnon for MVP. Like, I thought he had one of the five best seasons, and I just forgot he existed. And it's like, like, you have to, like, use your brain. People got all upset about, like, oh, you're throwing your vote away because Dom Lucision didn't have Draisaitl in his top five, which I think is I probably would have had him fourth or fifth. I wouldn't have had him any higher than that. I think that's an arguable point. But if you're going, I just forgot the second or third best player in the league exists. You shouldn't get to, like, you should not get to vote anymore.
That's
period.
That's unforgivable. But
yes,
when it comes to people like Dom or even like the Luke Fox ballot, like, there's almost 200 people voting on this sort of thing. If you want all 200 ballots to be the same five guys, there's room for a few people who have different approaches or different whatever it is.
Yeah,
sure. I don't know, like, if Luke's written about it, if he's explained why he voted that way.
Yeah, Jonathan Willis is the guy who left MacKinnon off intentionally, and he was like, you know, I had him like fifth or sixth. And it's like, I mean, you're wrong, but
that's
I get
fine.
It. I get that. I think it's a stupid vote, but, like, that.
And Willis is a really smart guy.
He's a smart guy,
but
exactly.
Because he's an Edmonton guy, that opens him up to the criticism that, oh, you're trying to. You're
burying MacKinnon.
You're burying the guy
Draisaitl.
Who is maybe going to be.
Yeah, you want to get your guy across the finish line.
Which
absolutely.
I don't believe he would do, but that's unfortunately what you kind of. And look, that's part of this. When you vote, I defy any writer to say that at no point in putting their ballot together do they start to envision what kind of reaction they might get one way or another. Not that that hopefully influences, but it absolutely, there are times where you're looking at a ballot going, oh, I'm going to get killed for this by such and such a fan base, or I'm going to get called a homer for that, or I'm going to, you know, and then.
And that's why you just bite the bullet and put David Pastrnak as the most valuable player in the league this
year. No, but that's, you see, but Sean, you're describing why transparency is great.
Yep.
Because, like, they because it might prevent them from making a bad choice. Like the public mm-hmm. scrutiny part of it is, like, I'm reviewing my choices to make sure that they are not ones that will get called out for being fucking dumb. And that's why it's great that there is transparency.
Yeah, if you don't, I say it all the time. If you don't want your bad takes to get criticized, don't let your takes be bad.
Right. Or, pretty simple. You know, defend or have the self-evaluation to defend them.
Yeah.
You know, and create logic to defend
them. To know you have to defend it. That's the thing. It's not right. It's not the dumb votes that I'm worried about. I'm worried about the guy who just, you know, to pick. And if somebody in Toronto legitimately thinks Austin Matthews was the fifth most valuable player in the league, which is not an outrageous
take. It's not outrageous, right.
But if they're sitting there going, oh, if I put him fifth, everyone's just going to call it a homer vote. And, you know, did they change? Yeah, I mean, that's where revealing the ballots maybe becomes a problem. But I I've been in favor of revealing the ballots since before we were doing it. I sat in those meetings, probably next to you, Greg, like making that argument and hearing people argue against it. And I'm glad we do it. But it is... You know, there's look, this is part of it, right? Like, I can't get mad that these ballots come out and fans like seek people out and get mad at them, because fans,
that's the
being
point,
too invested
also
in this is why we do it, within reason, of course. There's always people.
Oh yeah,
take it too far.
I just like, at the end of the day, listen, my takes are bullshit sometimes too. Everybody can take issue with my heart votes every season. That's fine. I just, if you have a weird ass ballot, that's okay. Like, to each their own. Like, Dom has his own dogma that he follows on his votes. That's cool. Whatever. It just, you got to be able to defend it at the end of the day.
Right. Yeah. And I'm waiting for somebody to defend that Drew Doughty, fifth best defenseman in the league.
Yeah,
take
it's
this
insane.
Year. Like, that's
it's
ridiculous.
It's fucking ridiculous. But exactly. So, like, maybe you want to defend it, maybe you don't.
And,
but at least at the end of the day, like, make sure you can defend all your votes.
And hopefully it's a good defense and it's not one of these, you know, clickbaity, look at me, I get to be the news cycle for a day, that some people do. I mean, I saw people accusing Dom of that, which is nonsense. Like, he's on a subscription site. We're not trying to get hate clicks on a site that you have to pay. That's not how business works.
If anything, that's the opposite of how
it
works.
Is the exact opposite. Like,
right.
It's really, but yeah, it's,
I will
say
the
level of bad votes is, I think, getting better.
It's dropping,
worse.
For
yeah,
sure.
Whatever.
Yeah,
sure.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And I'll say this about the process, too. Like, for those who don't know, it's an email that goes out, and there are different, like, slots where you physically type in the name of a player, and then you send the email back. And maybe that's not the most efficient way to do this. Like, maybe if there was, like, pull-down menus, like you have when you vote for the All-Star team, for example, it would make it better than, you know, having to kind of, like, write it out longhand and fucking go back and check to make sure you didn't, like, forget the Selkie or some shit.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I painstakingly go over my ballot.
Yep.
Yeah,
to make sure
and
that everything's
like,
in place.
You shouldn't have to babysit a bunch of people whose job is to just watch hockey. That's all they do. And you go, oh, by the way, you had Andrei Vasilevsky as a center. He's a goalie.
Well, yeah. And that's like what John Worrow of the AP puts Adam Fox as a forward on his all-rookie team.
Again, like that's a guy who
take the extra minute to make sure you didn't put a fucking defenseman as a forward on your rookie
absolutely
team.
Absolutely, except I'll say, because I'm like you, Greg. Like, I spend a ton of time figuring out what my ballot is and then way too much time, like, proofreading it, because I don't want to be the guy who, like, is in that paragraph of, like, Sean forgot to put this. So,
exactly.
So I spend way too... And I like... have like middle of the night oh crap, did I put this guy on the wrong position or whatever. I will just say, to state the obvious, like, we get a couple of days to do this. In a regular year, a couple days is enough, because you're a pro. Who knows what was going on for people in 2020. Like, I don't want to call someone out and then find out they're like, oh yeah, like my parents were sick, so sorry, I didn't have as much time as.
Well, the other thing is, John Warrow gave Leon Draisaitl a fifth place Selkie vote. So I think maybe that's just a not paying attention thing, because like that was the only conversation about Leon Draisaitl is his defense is bad.
I do like this peek into Sean's life that we're getting, where like he wakes up in a cold sweat at 2 a.m. and his wife's
that's
like,
right.
"What's wrong?" And he's like, "I'm thinking about the Selkie."
Yeah, that's
good times.
That's
pretty accurate,
but it's closer to 4 a.m. But yeah, that
well, I was going by my time, 4 a.m. your
true.
Time.
Good point.
Bobby Bugner is hired by the San Jose Sharks formerly. And brings along.
Well, I mean, all that success he had in Florida. Why wouldn't you?
This is just like a weird. I don't know. Like,
you know what? Honestly,
what
like we just finished talking about people not paying attention or whatever. Like when I saw that news come across, I was like, "Oh, that's a weird hire." And I was like halfway through the article before I realized he had been the interim coach for half the season, and I was like, "Oh yeah."
Because he had been like an assistant before he got the Florida job, and then they were like, "Well, everybody here likes him, so we'll just bring him back."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he like Doug Wilson. I was at the press conference when they fired DeBoer and they hired Bugner, and Doug Wilson kind of made it out to be like Bugner was added to the staff as sort of your like head coach in waiting, kind of groomed to take over guy, which I never really. I mean, he's got respect. Like there are people that remember him from his head coaching days, and I think it was like junior and when he was assistant coach in Columbus or whatever, or have you. Like there, he's definitely got some people that feel he's got that quality of you fuck up your first time, you come back and become a great coach. And we've seen that happen with DeBoer, we've seen that happen with Glant and other people. So I don't hate it, and I think he's got a pretty good staff around him. I just don't quite know what the path forward is for San Jose. Based on their farm system and based on their current roster and everything else.
Yeah, I think, you know, there are maybe six, seven, eight coaches in the NHL who are like make a positive difference for their team, like noticeably, right? And then there's maybe four or five who make a negative difference noticeably. And then everybody else is kind of in the middle, like, you know, just kind of. Yeah, plus or minus a couple of goals.
I like this. I like this because I want to ask you about a guy. Does Tortorella make a positive or negative difference?
I think at this point he makes a positive difference. Absolutely.
Okay. Okay.
I wouldn't have said that 5 years ago, but I think he's really kind of changed his approach. And, you know, again, like, doesn't necessarily make for interesting hockey, but the point of being a hockey coach is to win games and not, like.
Does Mike Sullivan make a positive or negative impact on his team, or is he besides the point?
I think he's on the lower end of making that positive difference, but he does. Like I said it last week, Laviolette might be the last guy through the door on that for me.
right.
But I think Bob Bugner is in that bottom four or five where it's like, oh, he's like not – you know, what he did in Florida was like demonstrably – worse. Like he came in, they got worse, he left, they got better. What changed, you know? Like a little bit of personnel, but for the most part he stopped being their coach, and that's why they got a little bit better. So
yeah, the thing with me is if he hadn't been the interim coach for half a year and that he was just a candidate this season next to the Gerard Gallants and Bruce Boudreaux and maybe even the Mike Babcocks, Is he a guy that is at the top of too many lists? I'm not completely sure that he is. So.
Yeah, and I mean, it all happened a million years ago, so I can't really remember. Didn't they get worse when he came aboard? Like they were like, "Oh, we're so fucking bad, we got to fire the coach." Yeah, and like they lost more games even before they started selling off pieces than they did when DeBoer was like. Ruining their season in their view, you know.
Mm-hmm. They need to figure out who's going to make a save for them next year, and then once they figure that out, then maybe they've got a little bit of something they can work with.
Sure,
because Lord knows there's goalies available, and Lord knows with Arundel leaving that you're going to need a goalie anyway. So, interesting to see what they do there. I don't know. Like they're a team that could easily just all of a sudden snap to and go on a little bit of a run if there's any kind of supporting cast behind the top end guys. I just, you know, the young guys that they had last year weren't ready. And,
and the top end guys are all a year older now. I mean, more than
a year
older.
Yeah, they all got fucking hurt last year. Yeah, I mean, like, you know, Hurdle got hurt, and Couture got hurt, and Carlson got hurt again, and it just...
Well, with Carlson especially, you're just like, oh, is this just, like, how it is now, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. One thing I didn't put on the rundown, but we should talk about, is Alex Pietrangelo with the Blues taking this... I wrote about it this week in the column, this very public... negotiating tactic where he's doing interviews with people from St. Louis media, Jeremy Rutherford in particular with The Athletic, to get his story out there about how things are going and, you know, how they're at a stalemate and they broke off talks and he doesn't want to go, but this, that, the other thing. And it does seem the details on this contract negotiation coming out so publicly is kind of startling. Like, we all kind of know now what how much they're giving him, and that the hang-up is that he's asking for signing bonus money that Doug Armstrong never gives anybody, and a no-move clause, which Doug Armstrong never gives anybody. So to have all this out there, I think, is a calculated move to create a wave of public sentiment to, hey, sign our captain. And I think it's actually kind of working, to be honest with you.
Dude, as a Leafs fan, going through the Mitch Marner thing last year, PR is a very underrated part of negotiating a new deal. And I think he's... Pietrangelo is doing a good job, and or his camp or whoever it is, and that's smart, you know. I mean, obviously, it's not always appropriate to go public with things, but sometimes, yeah. I mean, of course.
Well, when you want $9 million in an economic downturn where you can't get fans in the building and the salary cap is flat, like you kind of have to make your case publicly. And you know, look, I'm not saying he's wrong for trying to get the money, secure the bag, whatever you want to say. Like, that's fully his right. He played for a discount all these years, blah, blah, blah. That's all true. And this is his last chance to get a big contract. That's probably also true. But, like, I wonder how realistic it is to say, oh, I deserve to be a $9.25 million defenseman, given the economics of what's going on in the league right now.
Well, I mean, the counter argument would be that there are already $9 and $10 and $11 million defensemen out there. And
I get it.
And the other piece of it is, it's easier. I think they're doing well in the PR battle, but it's easier to do well in a PR battle when you actually are right on some things. And if part of this is that they're not offering any bonus money, because the Blues have just decided they don't do bonus money. Well, bonus money is part of a contract in the NHL. And so for Alex Pietrangelo to say, like, yeah, I want any other team would give me bonus money. I want bonus money. Or, you know, I want a no move. And if it's team policy, well, maybe it shouldn't be. Like, that's a pretty reasonable case to make, especially when you are, you know, the captain who led them to the Stanley Cup, one of the, you know, probably – five best defensemen they've ever had in the history of the field, like all this stuff.
Oh, it's still one of the five best defensemen in the league, arguably, right?
Yeah,
now.
Probably.
Like I mean, the window to win for the Blues is still very much within the next couple of years, right? Like, let's be honest. And sure, every analysis of Pietrangelo's game that you see has that fucking curve bending all the way down by the time this contract would be over. But in the short term, which is the reason you sign these deals, like, they're exponentially better with him on their blue line than without him.
Oh yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it helps to have one of the five best defensemen in the league. Yes, I think that's a fair argument.
It's a demonstrable fact. Yeah,
interesting.
Okay. And it's funny, you know, when you talk about the contract stuff, you know, the example you'll give about teams kind of bending over and changing their policies for a guy would be the Golden Knights and Mark Stone. Like, George McPhee had never. His administration, let's call it, had never given out a no-move clause. Stone got one. They did not give out any signing bonus money. Stone's gotten, you know, $7 million next season, and then $5 million of signing bonus money. So they had a guy that they really wanted to keep, and they had to bend over a little bit to keep him. And did the fucking world end? No, I don't think it did. So, like, you bend your rules a little bit depending on the player.
But,
and I think but in Angel's case,
I will say this though: if you're talking about signing bonuses, there is a big difference between Alex Pietrangelo saying, you know, if I'm going to sign, it's going to be a front loaded contract. You know, if I get $15 million in cash in the first year, I want $14 million of that as a signing bonus, and I could get that from the Leafs or I could get that from whatever other team. There's a big difference between that versus I want signing bonus heavy in years 6, 7, and 8 because that makes it impossible to get bought out. That is a situation where that's not a financial question only for the team the way that doing it at the front of the contract is. That becomes like strategically roster building. Do we want to be committed to a guy who's going to be 33 or 34 and we may need the freedom to move on from him? That's a very different thing. And
right.
They're being smart by conflating those two things and just saying it's signing bonus.
Yeah, he's looking for a contract that pays him till he's 37 or 38 years old, right? At the end of the day. And, you know, I think there's an argument for, yeah, he's, you know, if he's a top five defenseman in the league at 30, you know, he's still going to be a pretty useful player for you at 35, 36. Maybe not worth the full freight, but like, you know, on a reasonable contract or a lower contract, I guess, like what the Blues offer is like 7.5, 7.75, if I'm not mistaken.
Like yeah, I think that's what was reported.
I think that's fairly easy to swallow if you're like, well, look, you know, we got X years of surplus value, but if he's like, I need to be a $9.5 million defenseman, $9.25 million defenseman when I'm 38 years old, it's like, oh, that's fucking crazy.
Yeah, and
you know, like that's
kind of Blues are perfectly within their rights at that point to say, if we're going to do that or anything close to that, your buyout protection is that you hold up your end of the deal and play well enough that we wouldn't think of buying you out. And if you don't do that, then we need to have an escape hatch on this contract, and that's just how it's going to be.
Yeah, I think if I'm the Blues, I say, hey, go see what's out there, honestly, because, yeah, if some team in this flat cap universe for, you know, not just next year, the year after as well, pretty much, it goes up, what, $1 million, I think? But if you're worrying about figuring it out with a 32-year-old guy who's still making $9.5 million, and you know, we've seen it a million times where a guy's like, oh wow, he's really good, and then the wheels just fucking come off because he has one knee injury, you know, at 32 years old, and it's like, well, he's cooked forever now. And it's like, well, if he has 6 years left on that deal, that's a problem. So
well, I also think they dig in their heels because the one thing this public negotiation tells you is how desperate he is to stay.
Yeah.
Like they built their own house like in the suburbs of St. Louis. They've got four kids now. Like he's been there his entire NHL life. Like he clearly just doesn't want to fucking leave. Like I've always said on the podcast, you don't want to ever move your stuff if you're the NHL guy. So, you know, that's a good place to be if you're Doug Armstrong. Like, you know, that's the same. I mean, and we've known this since they made the Justin Falk deal and signed him. Like we've known that they think that Pietrangelo is just going to take whatever the fuck they give him because he doesn't want to leave St. Louis, and they're kind of preying on that idea. And in a way this public negotiation has kind of confirmed that, I think, in the eyes of Blues management.
Yeah, and, well, the other thing to say is maybe they shouldn't have given Justin Falk that contract.
Of course they shouldn't have.
Like no shit. Well, obviously no shit. But like, there's a few guys on that team where it's like, ooh, that contract it might be the reason they can't re-sign Pietrangelo. There's like four or five guys like that, and I guess it's one lower now that they traded Jake Allen for basically nothing. But you know, that's a thing Doug Armstrong has to reckon with as well. Like, maybe I wouldn't be in this fucking fix if I didn't feel like giving Justin Falk $6.5 million.
Yeah. Sean, you had a question for Ryan, you said, on this podcast.
I do, and it's an important one. Uh-oh. And it's actually, it's not even my question. I'm the messenger here. I've been asked to pass this along.
It's from Christ.
It's have you accepted? No, it's a question from my kids.
Okay.
And they want to know, Ryan, did you at any point successfully win a crown in Fall Guys?
I've never done it, no.
Good. Okay. Good, because neither have we, and that makes me feel better because I, We are still playing a bunch of that game, and I hate it. And I was worried that you were going to explain that you had like gotten so bored of winning them that.
I kind of hit a wall with the games are a little too repetitive, and it's like intentionally frustrating, and mm-hmm. after a while. But I have seen some people who are like, I'm going to Twitch stream me playing Fall Guys until I win a crown. And it could be an hour. It could be 6 hours. It could be 12. I don't know. I've never done it, and I want to do it, and blah, blah, blah. And it, like,
did you have any particularly good, like, near miss situations?
The last time I played, I was the second to last guy in the one where it's the two swinging things and the floor is dropping out.
You got to jump. Yeah.
And you got to jump. And a guy jumped, the guy like intentionally jumped in, the last other guy intentionally jumped into me to make me bounce into the top one. And I literally, like, I didn't get up in time to avoid the bottom one, and it just swept me off the side, and I was so fucking mad, dude. I was so mad. So, awesome. I've been in the top two or three, maybe four or five times, but I've never closed the deal on it. It sucks.
Whoa. Wow. I don't play it, but I did start playing a new game on Switch. It's called World of Tanks. Are you aware of this game?
Yeah.
I had never played it before, and I'm like, there was a tank game that I played on PC in college that I fucking loved, and it had to do a lot with like the angle of your projectiles and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And this one's not that. I mean, this one's just like shooting your fucking guns at people. So I enjoy a good tank game. If anyone has a recommendation for a game that's a little bit more involved and has a little bit more kind of math and like your game planning out where your artillery is headed, I'm all for it. I've yet to find a game that really has that I'm satisfied with.
Yeah, there's been a lot of good video games come out in the last 3 or 4 months. So I'm just constantly going back and forth between like Fall Guys and Crusader Kings 3 and Tony Hawk Remaster, which is excellent. So,
and don't forget Breath of the Wild prequel fighting game coming out soon. I think maybe next couple months from now, maybe.
Oh, really? A fighting game?
Yeah.
No, thanks.
Warriors, the Hyrule Warriors game.
Oh, I didn't realize that was a fighting game. I don't like the mainline Zelda game, or the non-mainline Zelda games.
It's not a mainline. It's Breath of the Wild storyline, so I have time for that. It's kind of like, you know, how we got to that point when that game starts. So I'm all right with that. Real quick on music, Rolling Stone redid their top 500 albums of all time, and this was the top 10. The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, Bob Dylan's Blood on the Tracks, Prince's Purple Rain, Fleetwood Mac's Rumors, Nirvana's Nevermind.
Nirvana, are you from Etobicoke? What's going on?
No, I say Nirvana because of the In Bloom video. I always have. Remember when the Ed Sullivan proxy comes out at the beginning of the video? He's like, ladies and gentlemen, Nirvana.
No,
I've always kind of just said it that way. Abbey Road, Stevie Wonder's Songs in the Key of Life, Joni Mitchell's Blue, The Beach Boys' Pet Sounds, and then Marvin Gaye's What's Going On as your number one album of all time, which is a hitting all quadrants kind of choice, and a pretty smart move there by Rolling Stone. It's fine. I was happy to see Nevermind in there. It seems like maybe a little bit high for
I would
that
say
album.
So, yeah.
In comparison to some of the other stuff, like I wouldn't necessarily put it above Exile on Main Street,
which I don't even think is the best Rolling Stones album. So. You know,
yeah, or any Stone, like the Stones' best album is probably better than Nevermind, but it's
a lot of it. It's like I get why people like that Lauryn Hill album. It's really not my preferred genre, and I totally get it. But it's just I wouldn't have it that high. I think these lists tend to underrate punk and heavy metal specifically. Like
very much so.
I think the highest heavy metal album is It might be the Black Album, but it might be Master of Puppets. But either way, it's in like the mid 100s.
I think the Black Album was higher than Master
Pathetic.
Of Puppets.
I mean, I have a whole different series of Metallica takes these days. But anyway, you know, I think, yeah, they have done a lot of good work to get just like people, you know, get out of the voting process. People who are just like, oh, I love like 4 Captain Beefheart records that I put in my top 200 or whatever.
The highest placing rap album outside the top 10 was Public Enemies, It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to say, speaking of hip hop, is big burn on Jay-Z having the blueprint under Illmatic. As I think they were both in the top 20, but Illmatic was 4 or 5 spots higher, and that's very funny to me. Like, I know that pisses Jay-Z off, so
and
that's
then
cool.
Also, 17 was My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy by Kanye, which I think
fully deserved. Fully deserved.
Yeah, from an artistic standpoint, it's probably his best album.
Oh, absolutely.
Not the one I listen to the most, I think, but absolutely.
Yeah, you're a big Graduation guy. Is that right?
I enjoy Late Registration.
No, Late Registration is, I think, is his clear number 2. It has the single best Kanye song on it. So,
what's the single best Kanye song?
Gone featuring Cameron. Who are the other two guys? Consequence, and I'm not going to pull the third one, but yeah, it's Gone is the best Kanye song.
It's very good. Sean, do you like music?
I do. Yeah, I own like 3 albums, so I'm pretty into it. I do. I'm not at the level of depth that probably either of you are, nor should anyone take my opinion seriously, because my taste is often pretty bad. But I looked at the list. I definitely a better list than, I don't know if it was the last one, but the main
the
one.
The 2012 version, yeah.
Yeah, and the 2003 even, I remember. I see that.
That was even worse, yeah.
Yeah,
they're
which was just
continually getting slightly better.
Just like all guys that, you know, nothing but like folk and rock and whatever, and it was better. I didn't, you know, I have not scrolled through the entire 500 album list.
Nor have I.
I don't think it's possible to do that on a phone without your phone crashing every 3 seconds because of whatever they do on their website. I would love it if somebody would just put the 500 albums in a list of text and put that link somewhere.
Sean, I'll hook you up in a minute. I have just
beautiful.
That.
Good.
Versus where they were ranked in 2012. So.
Ooh, okay.
Shout out to Canada, by the way. Arcade Fire's Funeral was number 500, I believe.
There's a lot of Canadian in the
very high. Very high for that record.
A lot of including Alanis in the top. Like, she was like 60th or something.
Oh,
I think.
Jagged Little Pill's incredible.
That's what makes me happy about this list. Like, Jagged Little Pill's incredible. Like, I know that it's not like Rumors is no stranger to being on these lists, but to have Rumors as one of the top
7
albums of all time
is
fucking fantastic. It is like Jagged Little Pill in the sense that
is it the best Fleetwood Mac album? I would say maybe not.
It is.
Tusk
is flawless. Here's the funny thing about Jagged Little Pill is that I think it's well known at this point that before she was like this shocking new artist in 96, Alanis up in Canada was like a teeny bop Britney Spears type singer. And she was from Ottawa, so she's like a local celebrity. I was up in Ottawa in like 95. And like word spread that Alanis was putting out a new album, but it was like a serious album and she was going to sing like real song. And people were just like, oh, this is going to be such a train wreck. And I was literally like doing an internship at the Ottawa Sun when their music critic like got the album. And I remember him like taking it away and then coming back and being like, I think this is good.
We got something here.
And we're like, no way. He was like, no, like, I think it's really good. Like, this is, and we're like, come on. Like, there's no way, like, you know, is there like an Always Too Hot sequel or something like that? And he was like, no, I think this is, and nobody was prepared for it to be like a worldwide smash. But I just remember that, like, of everybody just waiting to like tear this thing apart. And then it was like, oh shit, she actually delivered and more.
I'm trying to think of like the American proxy of this. It would be like if the music critic came back and said, guys, the new Jessica Simpson,
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah.
It's got some
depth. And not just like, she's not just doing like more mature pop, but like she's just going like full on, almost switch genres sort of thing. And yeah. Like a reaction video of every Canadian watching the You Ought to Know video for the first time would be just classic. Just like,
God, that song's so fucking good.
Yeah.
My favorite thing about the list, of course, is Wu-Tang's Enter the Wu-Tang 36 Chambers being ranked above the White Album.
Yeah, and I would say...
Put that in my veins.
Are the Wu-Tang Clan the Black Beatles? Well, who's to say? It's... man. It's getting better all the time. I love it. So.
It is. It is. All right. Speaking of getting better all the time, we've reached the good part of the show. It is now time for this week's game show. And I'm bringing back a favorite. We're playing Hockey Threesomes.
It is
the game in which I give the boys three topics, names, teams, what have you, and they have to find the common link between these three things. Hockey Threesomes. A classic bar trivia game, Lambert. Hockey Threesomes. All right. Who goes first?
I'm pretty sure the last time we played this, Ryan won, so.
Okay. Ryan, kick or receive?
I'll kick.
All right. Sean gets the first question here. Hockey Threesomes. Here we go. The Dallas Stars, the Carolina Hurricanes, Metallurg, Magnitogorsk. Dallas Stars, yeah. Carolina Hurricanes, Metallurg, Magnitogorsk. And of course, remember, he could just say, well, they're all hockey teams. That would not be right. There is a more specific connection.
Who are three people that have never been in my kitchen? That never gets old every time you... put this
so good, though.
All right, so I'm assuming this is going to be like somebody played for all three of these teams.
Maybe.
I'm having a hard enough time thinking of someone who played for Dallas and Carolina. So,
let alone Metallurg Magnitogorsk.
Yeah, I have no idea on that one. So. That's a college team, right? I'm assuming.
That's right. Yeah.
That's right. Mom, I got into Metallurg.
All right. Is it an Anton Khudobin thing? He's like the only Dallas Carolina crossover I can think of that would. Has he played for all three of those teams?
That is correct. Yeah. Anton Khudobin.
That's right.
Did you know that one, Ryan?
For like, Dallas.
I did, yeah.
Okay.
Carolina.
Do we have stealing
and Metallurg, in this? Magnitogorsk.
I don't know. Is there stealing? I would have got... I mean, you got it either way, so it doesn't really matter. But yeah, let's say there is stealing. Let's say there is.
I'm open to stealing. Yeah, okay. Why not? Let's spice it up. Sure. All right, here we go, Ryan.
Okay.
Hit the ice, face off, Bush League hockey. Hit the ice, face off, Barbara Bush League hockey.
I'm going to say those are all like lesser known hockey video games or something.
That is correct. Yeah. Hit the ice was Super Nintendo Genesis, face off a Commodore 64 game, and then Bush League hockey for the Xbox. Hockey video games was correct. We are off to a flying start. Sean. Alcoholism.
Oh, God.
Bacterial meningitis. All around dedication to hockey.
These are...
Alcoholism, I'm trying to think. Bacterial meningitis.
I know what it is, but I'm trying to think of how you're going to want me to phrase this. I shouldn't say I know what it is. I know what the...
Well, I mean, just say what it is.
It's obviously Masterton related. So it's...
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. Is that it?
Reasons
like, is that
players
all
won the Masterton trophy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Reasons players... Yeah. Is it Reasons players won? Because I was trying to think, was it Reasons players won or was it like the three nominees.
Three
this
guys
year.
This year. Yeah, I was trying to split the difference on that too. But
it's reasons players won the Masterton.
Okay.
I mean, all around dedication to hockey could apply to all of them, I suppose.
I think that's the definition of the award. But
that was a stated reason for somebody having won the award, rather than it being some hardship.
Other reasons. All right, other reasons include just being an old guy who's friends with a bunch of the media.
And in one case, losing an eye almost was one of the reasons. Okay, so at 2-1, Sean, we're off to a flying start here. You guys are on your game today. Ryan, Tom Fitzgerald, Jason Arnott, Shea Weber. Tom Fitzgerald, Jason Arnott, or Arnott. I'd go Arnott. I always like that better. Really, Sekera Sekera kind of situation for me. And then, of course, Shea Weber be the third. Tommy Fitzgerald. Jason Arnott. When he would be in a slump, they'd call him Jason Scornott, which I always thought was a good burn. Yeah.
I have no idea.
Oh. You want to hazard a guess?
No, because if Sean's trying to steal... I don't want to point him in the right direction.
Put him on the scent. Sean, do you have a steal?
I don't know if I have a steal because I'm not sure this is specific enough. I believe all three of those guys were Nashville Predators at some point. Is it more specific than that?
Now, Ryan, if I say that it is, will he have a chance to get it right? Or is his
initial I feel like that was my guess.
Wrong?
I feel like that was my...
Okay. Well, we'll just say you got it wrong.
Okay.
It's National Predators captains.
Oh, okay.
Oh, sure, yeah.
I would not have got
Tommy
that.
Tommy Fitzgerald was the first captain.
I thought Arnott was there for like a week. I'm surprised that he was...
No. All right. Here we go. How many of these did I do? One, two, three,
I don't
four,
know.
Five,
that was
six,
we've
seven.
Done four so far.
Okay. All right, here we go. So it's Sean now, right? Bobby Clark, Doug McLean, George McPhee. Bobby Clark, Doug McLean, George McPhee. Now, only one of these people tried to fight me in a bar. I can say that.
So far.
So far.
Well, you know. Always have something to root for, Greg.
Yeah.
I was in Vegas on the radio station yesterday, and Darren Millard told that story about how Doug McLean tried to fight me after trade deadline 1 year.
That's fun.
Yeah.
All right. Clearly, these were all okay. They were all GMs, but it can't be that. That would be too.
Hmm.
That would be too.
Too broad.
Easy.
Too general. Too broad.
Okay. I don't remember when Bobby Clark went to the Panthers, but were they all GMs of expansion teams?
That's correct.
Okay.
That is correct. Bobby Clark was the first GM of the Panthers. Doug McLean, of course, the founding general manager of the CBJ. And George McPhee, of course, the first general manager in the history of the Vegas Golden Knights, since replaced.
Yeah, he didn't do a very good job.
No. Yeah. You know. You know, the bar was set high. All right, Ryan. So Sean leads 3-1. Let's get this thing going. Martin Brodeur, Roman Turek, Brian Hayward. Marty Brodeur, Roman Turek, Brian Hayward. Now, only one of these players has left a coffee cup in his rental car. I know that.
Is it the Stanley Cup? No, you didn't leave that in your rental. Oh, fucking, I hate that commercial so much.
Is it the Calder Cup?
Goalies who led the league in wins.
Oh, you are so close. All three of these guys won the Jennings Trophy.
Okay.
I didn't get my chance to steal, and I'd like to say that I think all three of those guys won the Jennings Trophy.
Won the Jennings Trophy. Well, that's fine. I mean, yeah.
Roman Turek won the Jennings Trophy. That's
Yeah, he was the goalie the year the Blues won the President's Trophy.
Okay. That's because I was going to say part Blues of a goaltenders, but yeah, that's...
He was also part of a tandem that won 1 year, too, I think.
Oh, right. Would he have been the one in the when Calgary went to the cup final because Mika Kiprusoff had like a 940 save percentage or whatever?
He also won on his own, too, though. All right, let's play this whole thing out. Sean's got the win in the bag.
Well, Sean, I don't, because he could steal...
oh, okay.
Couldn't he?
Yeah. Well, sorry, I ruined the Jennings Trophy for you.
Yeah. Sorry, I was not going to get that one.
Oh, good. All right, Sean, here we go. So, Ryan, you are still in it mathematically.
Hooray.
Dave Hansen, Mark Messier, Leslie Nielsen. Dave Hansen, Mark Messier, and Leslie Nielsen.
NHL award show presenters.
That is incorrect. Ryan, do you have a chance to steal here? I'll say the names again. Dave Hansen.
Yeah.
Mark Messier. Leslie Nielsen.
I'm not gonna pull it. I feel like my brain is very close, but I'm just not gonna get there.
Okay. Do you want to hazard a guess?
They all
Dave Hansen, Mark Messier.
Yeah, they all were in hockey fights in movies.
God damn, you're close.
Ooh. Yeah.
Dave Hansen, Mark Messier, and Leslie Nielsen were all in the cast of Slapshot 3. The Junior League.
Sure they were.
Damn, I didn't know Leslie Nielsen was still working at that point. Good for him.
All right, let's close it out. Sean. Aces, Thunder, Ice Dice.
I think this is actually Ryan's. So
Ryan, Aces, Thunder, Ice Dice.
These are all names that Vegas considered but ultimately rejected for obvious reasons.
Ah, close. Pre-Golden Knights Vegas hockey teams is the answer. Wow. The Aces were a Pacific Southwest League team. The Thunder, of course, an IHL team. The Ice Dice played from 95 to 96 in the North American League.
Wow.
The Ice Dice. Fucking Ice Dice. All right. Last thing. We had a tiebreaker. I'll just give it to you anyway. It is hockey threesomes, so we'll do this number. And I will not call it closest to the T because people get angry when I say that. It's closest to the hole, obviously. How many players have had their number three retired in the NHL? We're looking for the closest number. You can go over. I'll start with you, Ryan.
Six.
Sean?
I'll go seven. Take the over.
It's a banner day for Down Goes Brown. The answer is eight. Eight players have had their number three retired, including New Jersey's own Ken Danica.
Good number.
There you go. We ever talk about what number you'd wear if you were in the NHL?
Wasn't that a question recently?
Did this recently, yes.
Mine
we
would,
did, yeah.
Yeah.
Mine would be 11.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I was 71.
Yeah, that's right.
I was 71 because I was playing on the other wing with Wendell, and I couldn't take his number. That would have been rude.
Hmm.
I go 31, one over Marty. Probably a goalie. So there you go.
Yeah.
My little league number was
47.
You
strike me as a goalie type. That's
I love it. When I would play street hockey and floor hockey, I was just talking about this the other day with Ruby about how I was a latchkey kid growing up, and one of the programs that they had in middle school was floor hockey. So it was me and a bunch of absolute degenerates, which was great because everybody played dirty. But I loved playing goal. I know that you're saying – Greg, why would you play goal? You're not limber. That's true, but I also love depriving people of joy, which is the primary function of a goaltender. So I always had a thing for playing goal in informal situations. Could I do it on an actual hockey level? Probably not. I don't think I'm quick enough or limber enough to do it. And after seeing Mythbusters take down the sumo wrestler as goaltender idea, I don't even think I'm big enough to do it. So there you go. All right. I think that's a long enough show. Anything you want to add to the program this week?
No, I'm good.
Okay.
I think we covered it.
Well, everybody enjoy games 4 and 5. We'll see where this whole thing goes. Next week, folks, it is a runaway winner in the Chipotle voting on the Puck Soup Patreon.
I think even that's underselling it, honestly.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it is a rout. It is the draft. What are we calling it?
The ultra-specific draft.
The ultra-specific draft will be your bonus episode for September. We're doing it next week. We'll get it in under the wire.
And like I said to you guys, but having started doing some initial research for this, nightmare. Absolute what nightmare. Fucking, this is going to be...
What a fucking try-hard.
Absolutely.
I already have...
Well, you don't.
Players.
You're not doing research. You're just gonna like off the top of your head try to come up with.
Yeah, I'm gonna wing it.
Yeah. Okay. Yep.
Alternating vowels and consonants. All right. Let me just think for a second. Enjoy 45 minutes of dead air.
I'm gonna wing it because I know there's nothing Ryan wants more than for me to ask specific questions about each player and his eligibility for each rule.
Yeah. It's pretty fucking straightforward. I can't imagine why. You would need clarification.
Now, did we decide that we're dumping the salary cap rule?
We have to because, like, to be able to, like, get down to, oh, I only have $900,000 to spend on, like, you know, the last three players, like an average of $900,000. And also one of them has to rhyme with the name of another player I've drafted. And one of them has to be a former Atlanta Thrasher. Like, it's literally impossible. So we figured out quickly that we are not going to be able to squeeze him under the salary cap. But
right. No salary cap. We've actually also named Bob Goodnow the commissioner of this new league because there will be no salary cap in his honor.
Oh, the other – I don't know if people who are listening to this and don't subscribe to the Patreon know. The idea is that there are – we came up with 23 categories with the help of our listeners where at least one player on every team has to fit at least one of the categories. And so some of the categories are guys who were traded in the last calendar year, guys who have exactly four vowels in their last name, guys who won the Mark Messier Award, guys who have played more than two plus stints with their current teams. And so on. Like, there are 23 of those extremely specific categories. So we're gonna draft those, like, early next week.
Going to be ridiculous. If you're not on the Patreon and you've been on the fence, like, this would not be a bad week to get in on. Because it might be the last one. Like, this could be the end of the show.
Yeah, and the joke was that we did the draft, like, coming up with the name or just the categories themselves as its own bonus episode with, like, vetoes and stuff like that. And then the listeners, we gave them the choice of do you want to hear it this month or do you want to, like, put it in the back pocket? And I think by, like, a 10-to-1 margin, people were like, do it this month. This is good. So... yeah, it's going to be something else.
Yep. Boy, howdy, it's going to be. Do check out the Patreon, obviously, for Ryan's newsletter, for all the bonus episodes for the mailbag we're about to do. And check out my other podcast, ESPN on Ice. We're having Ryan Kessler on this week to talk about his admissions of some health issues he had from what he says is abuse of pain medications while he was playing. You can check out my column. It's on the Alex Pietrangelo.
You'll get there one of these days. Bit.
And then also a little bit more on a topic we didn't talk about, actually, the NHL Bubble Confidential story that Emily and I did, as well as winners and losers of the week. What do you got going on, Ryan?
No, you already plugged it. Sign up for the Patreon. Sign up for My newsletter specifically this weekend, me and Sean Gentile are going to record an episode of Stick to Sports. So,
all right. Love it. I didn't realize that Sean's doppelganger, or maybe his not doppelganger, but maybe Sean, after taking the Super Soldier Serum, is Pat Maroon. Sean pointed it out to me the other day.
Yeah, Pat Maroon looking good, man.
Indeed.
He's living his best life, as they say.
Indeed. Sean?
Check me out on The Athletic. Had a bunch of stuff this week, including one where I went back and watched each of the last 25 cup handoffs to find out exactly who gets it when and why and all sorts of stuff like that in way too much detail. Like, not like even as I was writing this, I'm like, I've made a mistake, but people seem to like it. And on Friday, whatever day that is, I've got a new quiz coming. People seem to like those. So,
oh, hell yeah.
Go check it
out.
Always
a good time.
Yeah. And if DM me and I'll give you all the answers and you can look smart.
Ooh. All right. That's the show. Thanks, everybody, for supporting Puck Soup. Tell a friend, and we will talk to you next week. Bye.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.